Okay, welcome back. We're going to try to finish up the different symbolisms within the tzitzis. I'm going to need some more assistance over here. There's some complicated arithmetic that we'll need to do. And so everyone is welcome to join in and help me solve some of these problems. We'll begin with the Abu Dharam. The Abu Dharam writes that the four strings, Yesh Bidalat HaKnafayim, Lamed Beis Chutin. So a total, right, 8, 16, 24, 32. And 32, he says, when you count the fact that there's Shizurin, that each string is supposed to be spun from two other strings, so you end up with 64. Right? 64 strings that are each, you know, two are combined into a string, so you end up with 64. What's 64? 64, he says, is 4 cubed. Right? 4 times 4 is 16, times 4 is 64. Why is 4 cubed significant? He says, K'neged samach dalid panim sheyesh b'kisei hakavod. In the Ma'ase Merkava, the vision that Yechezkel and Yeshaya had, primarily Yechezkel, right, of how God's presence rests, so to speak, on the backs of angels, and we also find that God's presence rests on the heads, right, of the righteous, but on the backs of angels, those angels that carry, so to speak, God's presence are depicted as each one having four heads, right, a lion head, an eagle head, etc. Depicted different ways there's a face on each side of their head, right? And right, they depicted different ways in Yeshaya and in Yechezkel. Sure. Well, because there's five altogether. If you accept in Yeshaya, it's one way, and in Yechezkel, it's a different way. I don't remember which way is which.
That's why they saw the show underneath. So that's what they'd start with.
So how many, right? So how many of these angels are there? But if you assume that there's four angels, so four angels with four faces each gets you 16. I'm not sure how he gets 64, but he says that the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel says that arba'a panim le'achad, that when we say that each of these angels has four faces, the Targum translates that as minyan apaya, the number of faces, the arba berion, that these four things have in total is shitin v'arba apin, 64. I'm not sure how you get from 4 or 4 times 4 to the 64, but the Targum somehow sees an allusion to there being 64 faces that support, you know, the Shekhinah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so, V'chein Timtza, he says, and there's a third significance to 64, Samach Dalet Tevo, 64 words from Dabera B'nei Yisrael V'asulam Tzitzis, Ad Ani Hashem Elokeichem. So again, 64 seems to be a very significant number when it comes to tzitzis. And that's lirmos to hint us, ki'ilu ha-shechina kenegdo. When you see the tzitzis, right, it's to remind us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu kaviyachol travels with us, that he's standing in front of us at all times. He's with us at all times. And the tzitzis, which have the 64, as if, right, to remind us, like a miniature Merkava that's traveling together with us. V'achi amina b'sifrei and b'Yerushalmi, shkala mekayim mitzvah tzitzis, whoever fulfills tzitzis, ki'ilu mekabel p'nei ha-shechinah, it's as if he's greeting the Shekhinah, because the tzitzis, right, are somehow like a miniature merkava, and so yes, when you're wearing tzitzis, you are actively greeting the Shekhinah. And we get this from a pasuk which we saw earlier, uksiv hacha uri yisem oso, right, also the Prisha said was a hint singular to the oneness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ksiv hasam es Hashem Elokecha tira ve'oso ta'avod, him and him alone. Mishneh Brura in source number 11 tells us. It's a medrash, yeah. Yes, yes. Now this is also something which is a little bit difficult. Again, we're not allowed, right, to make something, right, that's symbolic of God. That would be making an Avodah Zarah. Yeah, but at the same time, right, we're allowed to write down the letters Yud Kei Vav Kei. Right, those letters, right, represent in some way. They that they represent either directly ideas which are godly ideas, the idea of God, or they represent syllables which represent those ideas. So tzitzis has to belong to that. Again, we're not going to worshiping tzitzis would be worshiping Avodah Zarah, just like worshiping a table would be worshiping Avodah Zarah, right? But as a reminder, perhaps not a representation, right, but a reminder of some of the things that we know about God's identity, so that's what the tzitzis can serve as. It reminds us, but the Abu Dharam is taking it even a little bit further. He's saying that the tzitzis is almost like a little merkava. We invite the Shekhinah to come, you know, and ride right on the strings of our tzitzis. So that already is going a tiny bit further. Abu Dharam feels that that's not problematic, but it's very mechudash. It's very very novel idea. Yes. I mean, God gives us permission, right, to mention His identity or His characteristics in certain ways, and we can't make an image, right, in order to represent that, in order to represent Him. But we could make an image, perhaps, to remind us of Him, or maybe not an image, but we can make something. It's hard to know. I mean, in the end of the day, an abstract representation. It's hard to understand why that's any better than a concrete representation, but
it's interesting that the tzitzis are in some ways actually more concrete, but the ksav, if written according to the Russian, has we learn certain amount of kedushas, or not that it's a kashpar kuja. There's actually a kedusha to it.
Right. What exactly, how things are invested with, I mean, the tzitzis also have kedusha. We know the tzitzis have kedusha because mali and bakodesh, and we find that in a number of places, the ascending number of loops, again, Ma'alin Bakodesh, Ve'in Moridin, each loop adds some Kedusha, right, to the Tzitzis. So there is Kedusha. It's true, definitely, that the Kedusha of a Sefer Torah is greater than the Kedusha of Tzitzis, but I'm only pointing out that it's clear that the Tzitzis, whatever, we're allowed to make Tzitzis, we're supposed to make Tzitzis. The Tzitzis do remind us, right, of something very exalted, something which in other contexts we would not be allowed, right, to represent at all. And it's worth thinking about, or maybe it's dangerous to think about, why it is that the tzitzis don't run afoul of the interdict against making representations of HaKadosh Baruch Hu who cannot be represented. That's the Abu Dharam.
It's not that we're saying this is the physical representation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a physical representation to us just to remind us of.
Yeah, I think a reminder. That's the best that I can do right now, is that it's a reminder, exactly.
Yeah, right. But because in Avodah Zarah, you're making the representation to represent the deity. So tzitzis, we're not making the tzitzis to represent HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a reminder to us that Hashem Echad of what we're supposed to think about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but not the physical representation of what God is.
This could be another reason why there's a chain from Dom Liam, Rakia, so it's not a direct representation of Hashem.
Not only this, there's no kedusha in tzitzit. Tzitzit, if it's possible, you wrap it up nicely in a plastic bag and you dispose of it. You don't have to put it in gniza. If it was a real kedusha in it, you'll have to put it in
I don't know. I think that it's still needing. Then you would have to then define what's the difference between a reminder and a representation. What are the characteristics that differentiate? So you're telling me it's the kavana of the manufacturer. I need to think about it some more. It's not the main point that I want to make now, but I think that it's.
But when somebody makes an Avodah Zarah, what is he doing? He's saying that I'm going to back. bowed down to this because this is my motivation of a representation of the deity itself. The tzitzis is not that. The tzitzis, we're not making something to represent what we think God is in his essence. We're just saying that that's a reminder. That's altogether different. To remind us of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is not a physical representation.
Okay.
It's subtle,
and I think it.
But that's, I think, what you have to say.
Okay. We'll take that for the time being as a working hypothesis, and we'll try to refine it when the time when the time comes for that. Let's see the Mishnah Brura. The Mishnah Brura says bekavanos, right? In the kavanos, which I think were from Reb Chaim Vital, Kasuv b'shnei ches b'sheni. The second of the four groups of loops, yeah. You're supposed to have eight times wound around the one string, wound around the seven. What does eight represent? V'chin eskimu achronim. Many achronim say that eight zayin v'ches. Take seven and eight together, the first two sets of loops, that's Shem Shel Yud K. Right, that the two of them together form a Yud K. And then B'tseruf, so V'achakach Yud Aleph, then the third loop has 11, so that's 15 plus 11 is 26. So that means Yud K Vav K. Heim Shem Shel Yud K Vav K. V'achakach Yud Gimel is Gematria Echad, so it's as if you wrote Hashem Echad. Right, the first three sets of loops are Hashem Echad, and or Ka Hashem Echad, and Zel Hashem Echad. But Betzitzis Shal Reb Shlomo Malko Hayabari Rishon. This is what the Sfaradim do. There's 10 in the first one, and then 5, and then 6, and sorry.
Yeah. Yud K Vav K, right? Yud K Vav K. 10, 5, yeah,
exactly.
6, 5.
So you'd have, so then it would literally spell it out. You wouldn't have to have the first two being Yud K, and then the first two plus the third, right, being right Yud K Vav K. Meaning instead of taking the first three all together to get the Yud K Vav K, you would have all four, right, for a total of Yud K Vav K. But again, one way or another, the allusion is to Hashem or to Hashem Echad. And again, it's reminding us of Kadosh Baruch Hu, and through that, we zechartem as kol mitzvos Hashem.
Another very important difference is it's not just a loop; it's a chulia. Basically, what you do is you round and you put it in. You know, we can demonstrate it. So, by the time you finish, there is like a shidra, you know, like a spine, mm-hmm. to the yud, to the vav. You know, so it's not just straight. Every
what does a chulia represent?
You need chuliot.
Chulia means more than one thing, I think. I think in the Rishonim, chulia means what you're saying, but in the Gemara,
they do it a chulia, not just a kriya.
Yeah, okay, but it's a different.
They do it as a chulia.
Right now, I'm just focusing on the symbolism of numbers here. If the chuliot, right, if tying it in that particular type of a knot, right, was meant to represent something additional, so then, right, but right now I'm just focusing on the numbers. The Prima Gadim gives a different interpretation of what the significance is of 7, 8, or 9, 11, and 13. He says, Minageinu, our custom is 7, 8, 11, 13. This is source number 12. Prima Gadim, Minageinu, Zayin Ches Yud Alef Yud Gimel. So he tells us Zayin is Rakim. The Gemara already tells us that. And even though we don't have Treles, and the Rosh says that because we don't have Treles, we can no longer symbolize the Rakia with our Choyos. We don't have Treles anymore, so we can't symbolize the Rakia in source number 12 with the Choyos. But the Prima Gadim says, yeah, maybe we're still doing our best. And like the Beis Yosef says, that the white is meant to replace the blue. So even though it's not blue, but it's there as a fill-in for blue. And so if it were blue, it would represent the Rakia. So now that it's white filling in for blue, it'll be the fill-in for the representation of the Rakias. What about 8? He says, Ayin Levush, we'll see that in a second. And the Prima Gadim suggests, V'nira Kemosha Kasa B'Medrash, that Moshe Rabbeinu, he says, if you look through Chamisha Chumshe Torah, you'll find that Moshe Rabbeinu likes to use the word Oz. Az Yashir Moshe, Az Yashir Yisrael, Az Yavdil Moshe Shalosh Arim. The word Oz, the Medrash points out, appears at many critical junctures in Chamisha Chumshe Torah. And so Oz is gematria 8. Now again, what's the connections? You'd have to figure out which of the Oz's or what's the common denominator between all of the Oz's. But the Prima Gaudium says that maybe, right, that is something that that the 8 times around represents is one or all of those partios that are introduced with Oz. Reminds us of Moshe Rabbeinu, the giver of the Torah. Perhaps it's not even that the common denominator is just that when Moshe Rabbeinu is talking or describing his own actions, he likes to describe them with the word Oz, and hence the 8 reminds us of Moshe Rabbeinu, the Mechokek, the one who transmitted all the Tariag Mitzvos to us from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's a good question. I'm not sure. The Medrash counts a lot. I didn't actually count them. So we could check. It's Yalkut Shemuni Remez 241, Resh Mem Aleph, and so we can see what we find over there. But we have that. And he says, or it could be al derech kinor lasid lavo ches nimin, that the kinor, right, that the harp that the Levium will play when Mashiach comes will be an 8-stringed harp. Lamatzeich al hashminis Mizmor leDavid. Excellent, right? An 8-stringed harp. So again, what's the symbolism of that? But it made the tzitzis remind us of Mashiach, the Avodas Beis HaMikdash, in the Emos HaMashiach. And again, that's supposed to remind us of Uzchartem as Kol Mitzvos Hashem, the Gula Mitzrayim, and the Gula Lasalavo, the mitzvos that sort of carry us, you know, towards that. And so perhaps that also reminds us of the Uzchartem as Kol Mitzvos Hashem. And then he gets into some astronomy, which is a little bit over my head. He says there are 7 Kochvei Leches, 7 moving stars. I'm not sure the history of astronomy, how many planets they were able to observe at what point in history. I assume that the moving stars mean the planets, which change location, right, based on, you know, where they are in their orbit. Kochvei Leches. And the Hey, Moshel al Kulam, or Hashem Moshel al Kulam. Hashem Moshel al Kulam. So that's a different allusion for the 7. Yud Aleph, he says, Kiminyan Shem Vav Hey. And he says, Ayin Tosus Yantif Perk Dalad de Sukkah, which talks about when it says, we say in Hoshanos, Ani Vaho Hoshiana. So there's a number of interpretations of what Ani Vaho Hoshiana mean. The Rambam says it means Ani Vahu. Maybe a hint to the pasuk, ki ani hu ve'ein Elokim imadi, right? I, God, am alone. I am the one, right? And there's no one else, nothing else, right? That stands with me. Ani hu, or it may be an allusion to the love between God, right, and Am Yisrael. Ani vahu, right? The ho would just be like who, I and he, like God and Am Yisrael together. Ani vahu, however. The Tosfos Yontif say that it's not just a word, but rather it is one of the esoteric names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ani is one name, and Hey Vav is its own name. And so the 11 is reminding us of that name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Again, the number of strings remind us of Hashem, and Yud Gimel is Kiminyan Echad, so again it's like saying Hashem Echad. But you don't need to add up all the first 3 to get to 26. You can just do it with 11 and say Hashem, Hashem Echad. And so you've got, according to the Prima Gaudium, you have this astronomy, right? You've got either the 7 Rakiyas or the 7 Kochvei Leches, and then afterwards you have 8. You have the unfolding historical process, and assuming, right, we talked about what is the Kesher Elyon, right? Is it the Kesher Elyon when you're holding the tzitzis, or the Kesher Elyon when the tzitzis are down? But if you assume it's the Kesher Elyon when you're holding the tzitzis, so you're ascending again, just like you go from the Yam to the Rakia to the Kisei HaKavod, so here you're going from the forces of nature and of history, and above those, the Arosham Shechinas Kael, that God, right, the Hashem Echad, is on top, right, is on top of those forces of nature and of history. So that's the Prima Gaudium. Shari Tshuva is an interesting observation here. He says, if all these gnats of the tzitzis are meant to represent the names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so we know that there's an isser against erasing Hashem's name. We don't want to erase something that reminds us of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So maybe just like we can't erase the letters Yud Kei Vav Kei, we also perhaps cannot untie the tzitzis, which represent the same idea. So says the Shari Tshuva, nonetheless, mutar lahatir tzitzis mi beged, even though HaKrichos is kemispar Hashem, and ein lahakben mishum mechikas Hashem. So he says the reason for that is a technicality, because the Isser of Mechika of erasing only applies to letters, right? To things that are formed with ink on paper. Ein ze ele betzures osios, aval derech gematria, right? Ein lachosh. If a person wrote the numbers, right? 10, and then followed by 5, 10, 5, 6, 5, right? 105,650. 565, right, that number doesn't have Kedusha, even though it happens to be the parallel that corresponds to the Yud and the Hey, etc. So he says it only applies to the letters when they're formed the way that the letters form, presumably the shape of the letters, and not just the ideas associated therewith. The letters, when they're in their proper shape, that's when they represent actually the fullness of the aspects of Hashem's identity that they're meant to represent. He says, Kasav, in I don't know what sefer this is, Shamidakim nohagu lasos lamid tes krichos, that those who are midak, they do 39, right? That is 7, 8 is 15, plus 11 and 13 is 24, so 15 and 24 is 39, right? That's the minhag of the Arizal, kemosh kasav Arizal, the hetik mi sefer hakavana mutak miksav yad me Rav Chaim Vital. So that's the 39. But beharan, right? Also kimo she'anu osim hayom zayin ches yud alef yud gimel. Then he quotes v'chein kasav b'yam shel Shlomo shel Yevamos v'kasav. Where do you get 39 from? What's the significance? Shenemar tal oros ki tal oros talecha v'eretz Rifayim tapil. Orot is b'gematria tzitzis, just like Nisharim. So Orot, tough, right? And then you've got tough Reish.
It's
613. Orot is 613. Tough Reish.
Right.
And then you've got two Vavs, which is 12, and an Aleph, which is 13. So you've got 613 from Orot. And Vishim Tal, so you have Lamed Tes, followed by Orot, which is 613. He says, Shem Tal, who told the Tfilas HaDerech, so one of the names that protect travelers, or that aspect of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, somehow Tiyul, Teslamid, right? I don't know whether there's a significance there, right? But it's good for Tfilas HaDerech. He gives this thing, Raniach Agudal al Mezuzah, and to say, Bilachisho, Bikidusho, Bikisoy Ponim, Bishimcha Tal, right? Atale Shlosha Pe'amim. So there's this idea also that 39 taken together is also one of the names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and so the full number 39 does represent the name of Hashem as well. I think there are some Achronim who say that this may be the origin of the word talis. Did the Torah ever use the word talis? No, but we call our tzitzis talis. Why talis? Because it's got this teslamid. It's a teslamid zach, right? A teslamid thing, right? Talis, because the tzitzis are supposed to have 39 somehow, right? That also the Gemara already said 13 krichos with 3 loops each. You get 39. So we see that there's a significance here to 39 associated with tzitzis. Again, the Elia Rabbah repeats this idea. He says in source 14, Halavush, the Achronim, many Achronim say, Hiskimu lasos ches. Whereas the Shulchan Aruch says the second Cholia should have 9, right? The Arizal and then say 8. The Avi Lamentes, because then you get a total of 39. Kiminyan osios shnios shall shame dal. So this is also very esoteric. He says, take the Yud Kei Vav Kei and take the letter after each of those letters. So Yud is followed by Kaf, right? Hey is followed by Vav. And Vav is followed by Zion, and then the other Hay is followed by a Vav. Add up those letters.
It's a Kuv Vav.
And you end up, right, you end up with
in the back of the
39. Kaf, right, Vav, Zion, Vav is 20, plus 12 is 32, plus Zion, right, is 39. So you get, again, 39 does correspond somehow to Hashem's name, and that's the shame, right, which is written on the mezuzah, kedisa b'yodeya. And he says, Kosav Shbishala, Bishim Rashal, Talis, who had Talis? And an Oros is Gematria Taryag Kmotzetzis. The Akrichos, ye minyan Teslamid, the who, Tal Oros, Talecha.
What did he say?
What is the meaning of talit? Who about talit?
My guess is that he's reading the pasuk, in Derech Remez, tal orot talecha. So tal means talis, orot means the tzitzis, which allude to the 613, and the talecha means that there's also supposed to be a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's 39, hatal shalcha, right? So the talis should have orot and talecha hinted at in its structure. That would be my guess. V'hu tal orot talecha. V'chin kasev b'matni Moshe. He said, v'kasev d'chavein d'shiva u'shmona hu neged shem shal yudkei. Acharkak Yud Aleph is Neged Vavke, and Acharkak Yud Gimel, but Gematria Echad, and that's Hashem Echad, which we saw earlier from the Mishnah Brura. So the Levush was quoted a couple of times earlier on. He has a totally different way of looking at this. We've seen so far that the Tzitzis, the Zechartim is Kol Mitzvos Hashem, Rav Moshe Darshan says it's Yitzias Mitzrayim, and the Prima Gadim says it may be the Gula Lasid Lavo. And most, the Shulchan Aruch says it's the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. Rashi says Taryag Mitzvos. And many, many Mefarshim say that in one way or another, it's Hashem and the Achdos Hashem and the oneness, and that's what's represented by the Tzitzis. And the Levush is coming a little bit out of left field over here. The Levush of all of the Mefarshim that I've seen comes closest to what Mr. Maskowitz and Rabbi Levi are suggesting about nature. About looking for God, not in the skies, right, and in the metaphysical astronomy, if you will, but rather looking for God in the smallest building blocks of nature, in the DNA, in something which is a little bit more natural and less esoteric. But nonetheless, the Tzitzis is reminding us that even if we look at nature, right, we can also see God. That's the Yam. Right? Before we start looking in the Sifrei Kabbalah, right, perhaps we should gain a deeper appreciation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu by just looking at His handiwork. That's what the Levush says. He says, the reason that we split up the krichos this way, it seems to me that the reason is that the seven krichos are keneged shiva avirim shabein ashmona rakiyim. This is very interesting. The Gemara says that there's seven heavens and six avirs, and the Levush says that there's eight and seven avirs. Where is that from exactly? I think that for the Levush, a rakia means something more astronomical, right, than it meant for the Gemara. So again, a reference to the moving stars, the planets. So you've got seven of those. Let's assume that each one has its own rakia, or its own orbit. Probably not. And then there's a rakia shmini, there's an eighth one. Shabo kol hakochavim hamazalos. The stationary stars, the constellations, are far out.
The old spheres that they used to visualize.
Yeah, so I'm not familiar enough with the history of it. It's definitely true, right, that in medieval philosophy, that it was assumed that the further away you got from the earth, so the more refined and exalted you were. The moon, was closer, so it wasn't, but it was still higher. It was assumed that the moon was intelligent. The Rambam actually writes this, which I still am working on. Right? The Rambam says, Hashamayim misaprim kivod el umasei adav magid harakia. So the Rambam says this is supposed to be understood literally, that just like we daven, at least some of the time during the day, says the Rambam, the heavenly bodies, the moon, the sun, the stars, the constellations, the planets, they're davening all the time, because they're so much closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that the inspiration to daven never leaves them. We're far, far away. We've got all sorts of distractions, that because we're finite and we're made out of heavy, you know, materials, and so we enjoy good food and we enjoy other things, but the planets are much more abstract, they're much more refined, and so they just dive in the whole day. Ashamayim misafrim kivod el. Yom liyom yabia omer, right? From day to day, right? They're just talking. There's intelligence there. They realize that there's a chachma, there's a wisdom, right? Wisdom demands or requires or says that the way to achieve, you know, greatness and goodness in life is to daven.
The
chalal
arutz yata.
The
way I understand that is that each of the celestial bodies has a malach that represents it.
Yes, but that's not how the Rambam understands it. And that's not how medieval philosophers understood it. They understood it. That's why Galileo was such a challenge to the religious philosophy of in the precise history of astronomy. I'm not familiar with. So, like, to say that there were a certain number of known planets going back 1,500 years, and then after that, maybe in the 1,000 years between the Gemara and the Levush. So maybe did they discover an eighth planet? I'm not.
Since they made the Hubble telescope, traveled through space where nobody has not gone before, and then they retired this Hubble telescope and they made another telescope. They're able to see 80 million years ahead. Recently, they found a constellation all blue, just like Earth. And even the more they go through today, the science of the astronomy community, they are coming to the fact that all of them, as they travel into the space, they're coming back, they say, the Bible said this. The Bible has mentioned this. Whatever they come across, they said that there's a mention of it in the Bible. So they're beginning to, the more they travel, they're beginning to understand that there is an order that controls everything. That's what they're believing.
Yeah. Again, you look at nature, you look at outer space, you look at the Rakiyas, right? And the Rakiyas remind us of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I think it's also the Levush is very much the Shita. So we started out with the Levush. The Levush says that whatever you do, you should just have some symbolism there. So he'll tell you, the Gemara said seven for the seven Rakiyas, for the seven planets. And I'll tell you eight, which is the seven planets plus the constellations, and that's the significance of eight. Right? And so he gets there, you could count the skies, the Rakiyas, as seven. If you want, you could count them as eight, and since he needs to explain, right, why we have eight in the second series of loops. So we'll tell you that's the seven Rakiyas plus that eighth Rakiya.
Is there any mention about the seven other planets? Pluto, Saturn, and all that, Mercury, and all
that? I'm not sure. Again, the Rishonim here talk about the Sheva Kochvei Leches, which I'm assuming are the planets, because those appear to be moving. When the Gemara says the seven Rakiyas, I don't know whether it's referring to the planets that they were able to see or not. I'm not sure. They may be referring to something else, because they understood that nature is meant to be divided into groups of seven. I'm not sure whether they did that based on observing the planets, or whether they did that based on observing the Torah, the 7 weeks and 7 days in the week, and the seven years in a Shemitah cycle, and seven Shemitahs in a Yovel. And so they understood from the Torah that that nature lends itself to being divided by seven.
I think the seven it includes five planets and Earth and also the moon.
Sun and the moon.
I think that it wasn't seven planets besides. I think it included the moon and the Earth. So that there were five planets in medieval thinking, and the Earth and the moon. So that's seven. But anyway. Mm-hmm. You asked about the Rambam and
I want to leave that for a different time, because I want to finish this. Can we wait till afterwards, because it's already a tangent on a tangent. So the Levush says
But
the
Kisei Kavod and all these things, what do we do with all these? I mean, we talk about these, how are we supposed to relate, or the Kisei Kavod, we don't see it, or
Hashem sits on a Yom Kippur.
And so this, we started out, we said, you look at a spoon, right, and you see a bird. Right? That's the nature of abstract art. My modern art in general is abstract, that we try to represent an idea, right, and by giving it some sort of a form, but we can't represent an idea that doesn't have a form. And so you need to capture, right, that idea in a form that reminds us, right, of the idea, and there needs to be like a communion between the artist and the audience, right? He's got to tap into something that they're able to see in common. And sometimes it's not so easy, right? If the customs inspectors, they saw a spoon, and you know, it took this person, he had to take them to court, and he had to show the judge, hey, this is not just a spoon, right? This is a representation of the concept of flight and of soaring. And so the same thing is true when you're dealing with such abstract and esoteric, you know, ideas as Kisi HaKavod and Achdus Hashem and all these other things. It's not easy. You know, you can show it to a regular, you know, customs inspector, and they'll just see strings and knots, right? But we look at it, right, with the background of the last hour and a half, and suddenly, right, what we see is not just a bunch of strings and knots, but we see many different reminders of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We see reminders, right, of the mitzvot, of the Chumshei Torah. We see reminders of the Geulas Mitzrayim and the Geula Asida. We see reminders of the beauty and the vastness and the complexity, right, of nature, which itself, you know, testifies to the existence of a creator. And so all of these things, which are ideas, they're ideas. They don't have a form. It's not as if you can paint them the way that you can paint the image of a person, right, or the image of a bowl of fruit, but at the same time, there is a possibility of representing these abstract things in a certain way, but that representation is based upon a meeting of the minds between, right, the artist and the audience. In this case, that the artists are Chazal and the Rishonim, and they gave us the tzitzis together with a commentary, with an explanation of what each of the different elements are meant to represent, so that, right, we can see in the tzitzis what they saw, right, when they told us to manufacture it in this way. Yeah. Yeah. Right, or it might just be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is beyond our comprehension, right? And that he has many, many facets, right? Many of which are to a great extent beyond our comprehension. And the tzitzis is meant to remind us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's got, you know, all of these things and the ways. But because we've lost so much and we're so busy, we don't have the time or the knowledge available to properly comprehend all of these things, but we're aware nonetheless that there is a vast complexity, right, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right, and to the way that he relates to us. And Tzitzis reminds us perhaps of that there are so many different, you know, things that we could know if we only, you know, search them out about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Tzitzis perhaps just reminds us not of what we do understand, but of what we don't understand. But that itself is just as critical in remembering the mitzvos. That's what Hashem says to Iyo. Right? You're complaining about Tzadik V'Ralo. You're complaining about Tzadik V'Ralo when you understand all the secrets of nature and the secrets of the universe. So then, you know, you can talk about, you know, the nature of reward and punishment and good and evil. But the incomprehensibility of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is itself, you know, one of the most important messages that a Jew can, you know, can absorb. So again, the Lavush says that you've got the eight, seven planets, and then the stars that are beyond them. The Shmona Kvichos are Keneged Rakim Atzman, or Keneged Shmona Avirim, Kishakolim Erakiyat Tashi'imahem. Again, I'm not familiar with all these astronomical allusions. The Fisha Imbo Kolchav Roms Imosobifne Atzmo. But the basic idea is, look at the vastness of the universe, and that is a reminder and an inspiration for the fulfillment of the mitzvos. The Yud Aleph is Keneged Yud Aleph Kolchavim Sheberakia, 11 stars. 11 stars in Yosef's dream. The Levush says if you go through Tanakh and you count up every time that a star is named, says you'll find that there are 11 named stars in Tanakh. I haven't done it, but perhaps, you know, those who are more familiar in Tanakh, he says that there are 11 stars that are named in Tanakh. constellations that are named in Tanakh.
What constellation?
Yeah. And he says, or you could say, Yesh Omrim Tle Ugdi, of the 12 constellations, there are two that are Kemat Zura Achat Yeshlam, they look the same. And the 13 is Keneged Yud Beis. So this is very interesting. This is more abstract. He says you go from, right, from looking at astronomy to looking at mathematics. Somehow mathematics reminds us of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Where do you get this? He says, take a cube. If you have Yud Beis Gvulei Ha'alachsonim Shebechol Rakia Rakia Im HaMerkaz Shebeneim. HaMerkaz means a central point. The Alachsonim, right, are the angles and the diagonals. Right. Diagonals. So in this case, what he means, it's not, if it were circles, it would be the radii, right? But it's squares, so it means the either the width or the height, but it's a square, so it's the same thing. Right. So let's just call it the width. And he says if you take a cube, right, which has six squares arranged that way, and you draw lines that go from one square to the next square, you'll end up with six lines, and each of the six lines intersect at a central point. The central point divides each of the six lines into two, and so you end up with 13 points in total, 2 points.
Diagonal and plus the middle point.
Plus
the intersection.
Right. Okay, makes sense.
Yeah. A second, but where do you get the six lines? You're going from.
You have a cube,
right?
Each point, you have. Really
the cube has eight vertices, right?
Yes.
So how many vertices are you connecting to? How many vertices? And where do you get the number 12? It's got to be six. Right, and they've got to pass through the center also. Right, so I can, if I'm envisioning a cube in my head, I can draw one, right, two lines. Right, if I'm going to the middle of each of the planes, so then I can get six lines. Right, but where am I getting 12 from? That's what
because
I'm wondering.
They're divided into two by the intersection.
You need a cube.
Take a cube.
Take a cube.
No. Forget. Think that it is a cube.
Okay.
From here to here.
Okay. So that's two. One. That's two points, right?
Yeah. Exactly. From here to here, and from here to down there, and from here to here.
So that's eight. Right, that's four. Right, that's four. And each line has 2 points, so that gets you eight.
So. And they intersect in the middle.
Right, let's just take a look for a second. Source number 16. Right, source number 16. The Elie Rabba tries to explain. The Elie Rabba is a commentary on the Levush.
This is your cube.
Okay.
The lines go on here, here.
So how many?
Here. 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 Here.
That's already seven lines, though.
A lot more than seven. Right, only four on the cube.
Right, but we need to limit it to 12, right? 12 and plus a center point, which would be 13.
5, 6, 7. This is 12. The cube has a 2. It starts with a 12. 1.
Oh, 1 second. Right, so here, I think we're saying like this. If you count not the number of vertices, there's only 8 vertices, but if you connect the vertices without going through the center, then I'm just going to count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, right, 9, 10, 11, 12. So the number of lines that it takes to connect the 8 vertices of the cube are 12. But I still don't think that's what he's saying. And then he says the center, right, the center of the cube counts for something also.
Where's this cube? Where's this cube? Where's it going from?
What? The cube is supposed to represent the three-dimensional existence that we live in. And so if you talk about 13, right, so you have this idea that there's these three dimensions and that they're all energized by a 13th, right, which is the echad, it's the oneness which gives existence, right, to all the dimensions of existence. I think that's the mathematical metaphor. Let's just take a look at this Elie Rabba. I think that he's trying to explain it as well. He says, Pirish Mabusha Yotov, Shisha Kitzavos, Mala umata v'arba ruchos. So in a cube, you have six different planes, the top, the bottom, and the four sides. And min Americas el kulam, yihyu yud beis alachsonim. If you go from the center, right, to each of those six, you end up with 12 lines. Behagbalas kitzasam liktzasam. So for he said, so the El Yerabba is saying, if you go from the center to this wall, you've got one. Center to this wall is two. To this wall is three. To this wall is four. To this wall is, to the ceiling is five. And to the floor is six. So you've got six lines. And then he says, if you divide the six lines into two, because each of the lines is bisected by the center point, so that means that each of the lines has two, right, two sides. The six lines divided by the two sides is 12. But I don't know how the center point then both bisects the lines and counts as its own line. If it's the terminus, right, of each of the six lines, then why does it count by itself as well? But that seems to be the Al Yerabba's understanding, right, of the Lavush, that you've got these six lines going from north to south and from east to west and from up to down.
That's why I became a rabbi instead of
a mathematician. And then you can get another meth, even though it's a little bit of a different vowel, but yeah. So again, you have that in the Lavush, and he talks about then he says the Shulchan Aruch kasav akrichos mi zayin v'tes yud aleph yud gimel. So we have 7, 8, 11, 13. The Shulchan Aruch says 7, 9, 11, 13 for a total of 40. V'gam zoi kavanasa. This is the significance. 7 is the 7 planets. 9 is to include them and the Galgal, Shabo kol hakochavim, and the Yubiz Mazalos. And the 9th one is Achilik Shembo Kochav Cloud. The Krichos, Yachal Afilu Lechatchila Lasis Kamesh Yirtza. So basically, we have, right, these many, many different ways you can, many different ways that Lavush says, right, Kol Echad, right, Kamesh Yirtza, Kol Echad Lefi Kavanaso. Right, in the olden days, we had the Tchilas, and so that helped us to get the Rakiyas a lot more directly. We don't have the Tchilas, but we still have many, many, many different ways in which the Tzitzis can remind us of Kol Mitzvos Hashem, whether it's to remind us, right, of the Chamisha Chumash Torah and the Tayag Mitzvos, whether it's to remind us of Yetzias Mitzrayim and the Ches, eight strings of the Kinar La'aseh Lavo, whether it's to remind us, right, in one of many ways of the Shemos Hashem, which we don't comprehend, but which nonetheless are alluded to and hinted at, right, and in the strings of the Tzitzis, and that itself, Hashem's oneness, Hashem Echad, right, Echad is Gematria 39. And so there are many, many hints to that idea of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us, Uri Yisem Oso, that a person who wears the tzitzis is as if Shekhinah Kenegdo, it really alludes to the Merkava, right? And finally, we saw also some hints that by glancing at nature, right, it's not enough to look sometimes straight at the Rakia, which is beyond our grasp, but if you look at the Yom, in the ocean, you look at things that are more natural and you appreciate the beauty, the complexity of nature, whether it's the abstract, the human mind and the logic, with which all human minds are endowed of math and geometry, whether it's the astronomy, right, of the heavens, not in the metaphysical sense, right, of these rakiyim, but in the physical sense of observing, the planets that are observable with the naked eye, or whether it's in the sense, right, as some of us are suggesting, of looking at the, inwards at the building blocks, of the human body, right? But one way or another, that's the essential message of tzitzis, and that's the kiyum, right, of Uri Yisem Oso Zechartem as Kol Mitzvos Hashem, right, in the way that the tzitzis are constructed.
I mean.